daily, continue with the 7th chapter, and hopefully we will start with the 8th chapter. Could you open chapter 14? So, could you open the 7th chapter before we go on to the came up to verse 19 yesterday. So, the 7th chapter starts with the theme of how one can make one's mind attached to Krishna. So, that is what was the theme that the 6th chapter ended. And Krishna doesn't just tell a process directly to fix the mind of Krishna, but rather starts giving knowledge. So, here also jnana comes, jnanam deham savijnana. But the jnana which Krishna is talking about here is very different from what he talked about in the 4th chapter or the earlier chapters. Earlier it was more atma jnana. Jnana which enables the nishkam karma yoga, karma yogi to be detached while doing his work. But now Krishna is using the same word jnana, but this jnana is that which will enable the transcendentalist to fix the mind on him. So this jnana is about himself. So this is one of the features of the Bhagavad Gita. As the same word may be used at different places, but they may have different meanings. That's why we have to look at the context. So here Krishna's jnana that he is giving us about himself. So he starts by telling about how everything comes from him, and he is the source of everything. Not only the source, he is the essence of everything. So actually the list from 8 to 11 contains 14 items. And among them some are the sources and some are the essences. For example, the taste of water. Yeah, taste is the essence of water. The ability in man, that is the essence. But I am the seed of all existence, that is the source. So then some are the source, some are the essences. And after describing how he pervades the whole creation, then actually the question comes that Krishna is everywhere, why do people not know him? It is because of three modes. And how can they know him? That's what I'm saying. Then why don't they surrender? Because of the four factors. Because of ceremonial mentality or materialistic interest or whatever. Then Krishna starts talking about those who do surrender. And that is the section which we talked yesterday. So, I mean, go ahead to demigod worship. Before we go ahead, let's look at the different categories of devotees as Chakravarti Pad uses. So he tells that there are 7 types of devotees described in chapters 7 and 8. So 7.16 describes the 3 types of sakambhakas. Sakambhakas are apto, arthaati and jijnasu. There are 3 types. They are these devotees over here. They are all sakambhakas. Then 7.17 to 19 will describe the jnana mishrabhakas. He is also referred to in 16th verse, but he is focused on it. The 1789 verse, Jnana Mishra Bhakta. Then, after that, which we have not yet covered till now, 7.28 talks about the Moksha Kami Bhakta, one who wants Moksha. And this Moksha Kami can either be a Jnana Mishra or a Yoga Mishra Bhakta. That will vary. And then in the JM is Jnana Mishra, YM is Yoga Mishra. And in the next chapter, in one section, Krishna will talk about Yoga Mishra Bhakta. And in this chapter, right at the start, in 7.1, Maya Asakta Manaha, that was referring to Kevala Bhakta. Kevala Bhakta means a pure devotee. It's no other, no Mishra in it. No other Mishra, just pure devotee of the Lord. So, actually, all these different devotees are called devotees because bhakti is prominent among them. So, he says that, basically yesterday I mentioned there are, of course, I talked about two kinds of devotees. There is Kevala Bhakta and there is Pradhani Bhuta Bhakta. Bhakta. Pradhani Bhuti, all these are Pradhani Bhuti Bhakta. That means the jnana is also there, the yoga is also there. But jnana and yoga are not common, peace problems. That's why Eka Bhakti Vishishyate, that's what Esham Jnani Nitya Yukta, Eka Bhakti Vishishyate Krishna. So all these are, so the top, bottom one is Keval Bhakta, all remaining are Pradhani Bhuti Bhakta. Pradhani Bhuti, the main existence is Bhakti in that. Other things might also be there, but they are Pradhani Bhuti Bhakta. No, three types. First is three types. Yeah. No, because Chakravarti quite described that they are more interested in knowledge and reverence rather than active service. Even if they go back to the spiritual world, there is more in chanting. I have not talked about the destination here. I am trying to talk about the destination later in the 9th chapter. We will elaborate on who will get what destination. See, he uses another, there he says that there are four terms, I am not using them now.
Maybe I can. You have written this down? So? Different times of Sadhana is there, okay? Keval Bhakta are the topmost. They are nothing but Bhakti.
And below the Keval Bhakta are the...
I'll try to go. Okay, one more time. Pradhani Bhuti Bhakta. Then...
Keval Bhakta are pure devotees. Pradhani Bhuti Bhakta are those with whom
Bhakti is a prominent element in it.
Primary existence. That is, guna is the primary thing, material guna. Whatever it is. And now, the topmost of your devotee is no other motive. Paritam, Sam, Parotam, Ahetu, Kyabra, Jyata. That's a Dhani Guru Bhakta. Then you have yoga or jnana as a visual. Then, Guni Bhut Bhaktas are those who are basically karmis or jnanis or yogis, but they are using bhakti as a means for advancement. And then, the jnani, yogis, karmis, actually they are not practicing, the lowest one, they are not practicing bhakti at all. So, Chakravarti Pada describes that all of them have different destinations. They will become the eternal associates of the Lord in Goloka Vrindavan, the Keval Bhakta. The Pradhani Bhuti Bhakta they will go to Vaikuntha and Shantarati. repeated mentally. The Buddhist bhaktas, they are, they can be the Yoga Mishra bhaktas or the Jnana Mishra bhaktas. So they will go to the Brahma Jyoti. Because they are not knowing about, they are using bhakti primarily as a tool. And the Brahmanibhut bhaktas are, they, for them bhakti is a problem, but because they have come from the yoga background, they have come from the Jnana background, so therefore they also have the attraction to yoga and Jnana. In Deva Dharma, as well as Prem Prati, Bhakti Vartapa describes this character, Deva Dhikari. So there are the Vaishnavas who also practice yoga sadhana as a means to discipline their bodies and gain sense control. But their primary goal is Vishnu. Their primary goal is not yoga siddhi, their primary goal is not intimate, not nirvikalpa samadhi. Nirvikalpa samadhi is nirmadhi. Their goal is Vaishnava, is the goal of a Vaishnava. To go back to the spiritual world. They can use yoga as a sadhana. So, they are one category of people. They will go to the spiritual world. But, those for whom bhakti is a tool and their primary jnanis and yogis, and they will not go to the spiritual world. They will go where? To Brahma Jyoti. And he describes that without bhakti, ultimately no path can be developed. So, even jnana or karma, jnana or yoga, ashtanga yoga, which will be in this particular world, we refer here to Ashtanga Yoga. So even these, there has to be some element of bhakti in it. That's like, even among the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga, in the Niyamas, there is Ishwara Pandhana, the surrender to Ishwara. This is how it is, in the Shishwara. But greater than and less than. It's greater than a symbol. But the regular one where it is there. Then bhakti is more than, bhakti is predominant. But, yeah. No, they are just jnani and yogis. They are not having any bhakti. If they cannot make any spiritual, they cannot give a tangible destination unless they are looking for bhakti. If bhakti is absolute, then how can they attain tapa jyoti? Kyeha mam prapadyate. The first part is clear that ultimately the Lord will suffice according to one's desire. So if you see there also the word that is using tam prasaiva bhajamyaham bhajamya and yoginam salvation but the chance that bhavan bhajate yoga. So that bhaja root is still there over there also. If they are approaching the Lord, then if that is what they want, that's what the Lord will give. So bhakti is absolute, but the law, at least we can say the Lord is all powerful. But the Lord does not interfere with our freedom. And He gives us what we desire. See, when you say add bhakti means what? The Mayavadis offend Krishna's personal form. If people don't offend Krishna's personal form, they accepting bhakti as a tool, Krishna would explain it in the later chapter, in the 8th chapter. That means their goal is to, say, practice yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. But while chanting Om, they will also remember Krishna. So, that means bhakti is added as a limb. So when it becomes offensive, then it is thought that Bhagavan is a, the form of Bhagavan is a product of Maya. It's a temporary product of Maya and the only actual reality is Brahman. That is the offense. But bhakti, if someone is using as a means for spiritual advancement, that itself is not offensive. In fact, that is necessary. That is necessary for making any spiritual advancement. Yeah? Any relation between Goloka Vrindavan? Basically, Jiva Goswami in his Brahmacharya commentary describes that those who are not in the Madhurya Rasa, or not especially in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, and they also worship Radha Krishna, but they are not worshiping Radha Krishna in the Madhurya Rasa. there was Sri Radhakrishna in the Aishwarya Bhava.
So he described
that around Golok Vrindavan there is Vaikuntha Vrindavan. And Vaikuntha Vrindavan means that there is Radhakrishna, but they are worshipping Aishwarya Bhava. That is where they will go. So again, principle is Hamam Prabhupada. If they are worshipping in our brethren, then according to that they will get the destination. That's what it refers to.
See,
Mathura and Dwarka, although the Aishwarya is there, no doubt, but still,
if you look at Brihad Bhagavatamra,
the Gopumara's journey, Vaikuntha is there, above that Ayodhya is there, above that Dwarka, Mathura, and above that Vrindavan is there. So Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan are all considered a part of Goloka Vrindavan, all three at one, well. Although within the city, the Goloka Vrindavan, Vrindavan itself is properly highest. But all three are considered as being there, Rukmini Devi is also in Madhura. And her, there might be Aishwarya more, but it is not just Aishwarya, it is also Madhura. And there is not a, in Dwarka also we have Chandravali. And Chandravali controls Krishna. So, actually, you go somewhere to say that, Chandravali, not Chandravali, Satyabhama is there. So, actually, you go somewhere to say that, Radharani manifests in Dwarka as Satyabhama. And Chandravali manifests as Rukmini. Because Rukmini is mind and gentle. That is the mood of Chandravali. So Chandravali is fearful that Krishna will go. So whereas Radharani is afraid that from Radharani Krishna is afraid that Radharani will go with him. So like that Satyabhama is not afraid of Krishna. So Sudhvar Nilamani used the example that Krishna is like a male elephant and Chandravali is chasing after that male elephant. She is a female elephant chasing after that male elephant. But that male elephant is not even looking at the female elephant, she is speaking after other female elephants. That is Radha.
So,
this is a very exalted mood. But they all are considered to be part of the highest school, the school of Vrindavan. No, it refers to Yogina Sarvesha Madhakanantrasana, which refers to that a person who is understood that Krishna is, or the personal form of the Lord is the ultimate goal. So it can refer to Kevala Bhakta, and it can also refer to Prathamajan Bhakta. Because they are both going to go to the spiritual world proper, not just the spiritual sky, but the spiritual world. Spiritual sky is the Yogina Sarvesha Madhakanantrasana. So the spiritual world is referring to the Vaikuntha or Goloka.
No. Here he doesn't use the word guni in that sense over there.
He says guni good bhakta means what he, why he uses the word guni in the 11th canto, Dharmita, Krishna describes that all the other processes of transcendence are affected by the same one. Bhakti alone is transcendence. Even jnana is the highest, but jnana is satogana. And that's why he describes that if the devotee has to go back to the spiritual world, the devotee has to renounce his jnana. So he has to renounce his jnana and ultimately he becomes a pure devotee and goes back to the spiritual world. So Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga, these use the mind, the body, the intellect, which are material and which are products of the mood. That's why they are called as guni. So the processes themselves are affected by the mood. The processes themselves are not transcendent. Now, Kapil Dev talks about even bhakti in the three modes. That is true. But he is not talking about that only. There can be bhakti in the three modes also. But that is not actually exactly bhakti in the three modes. If you look at what he is describing, it is the bhakta in the three modes. The bhakti is transcendental, but the way the devotee behaves, that makes it appear that the bhakti is in the three modes. Bhakti itself is transcendental. And if the devotee is practicing, he will become transcendental. But unlike that, jnani, no matter how much he practices jnana, he will not become transcendental by practice of jnana. He has to take shelter of bhakti. He will come to a very exalted level of satrugana. but not transcendent.
That he is using all these things in Krishna's
service.
The main thing is the desire.
The desire to serve Krishna, that is mentioned in the Ashtanga Yogi or Jnana Yogi. So ultimately, it's not that pure devotee cannot use all these things. The thing is that there is a soul, there is an intelligence, there is a mind, there is a gross body. So the Ashtanga Yoga process basically uses the mind and the gross body. There is pranayama, niyama, asana, pranayama. Then pranayama involves circulating life air and goes to the mind. At the most, one can change the atma. But the jnana yoga process uses the intellect. But the soul per se, whose desires have been transformed, the desire for enjoyment, the desire for service, that itself does not happen by jnana yoga. Jnana or dhyana. That's why the desire process is actually under the mind. So they call it reason. Yes. I have to check it out. Because there is, see what happens is, in different contexts, different classifications are given. So when you do the different classifications, you cannot just superimpose one classification on another. Like if you, like we'll discuss later now. If we want to ask, in the body's metabolism, where does the Kundalini lie? If you know, Kundalini or even Jatrarni. It's a different model of the body. Body is in the stomach. But you know, in the biological model that we study, you don't see that. So, like that, there are different acharyas, based on different contexts, use different classifications. Now, wherever the acharyas have done some correlations, we can also do the correlations. For example, now, there are four levels of approaching God. Here is that duty now. Now how does that correlate with the four categories of devotees who approach God? Artho, Jijnyasu, Asati and Jnana. You can correlate in some way, but they are two different approaches to the situation. You can correlate. You know, Artho and Artho is that, Artho, Asati, they are desire, Jijnyasu is their desire. Then Jnani is their duty, he is certainly not at now. He is not at here. He has to put him at duty. You can do that. But the point is that it's not very easy to superimpose different classifications one over the other. All the classifications or typologies which are done, they are done for specific context and specific purposes. So we keep those in mind. And people like compare at the same destination. That is, it's called the mercy of the Lord. That's another compare getting liberation. That is not compare's glory, that is the glory of the Lord's mercy. So, so in that sense, there are different contexts with it. So, where were we? We were discussing these different kinds of bhaktas. And interestingly, Chakravarti Pal explained that Krishna is saying that this 7.17.19 is Pradhani Bhut Bhakta, who is Jnana Vishnu. He is as dear to me as myself. So, this is Chakravarti Pal 4 from Bhagavad Gita, where he says the pure devotee is more dear to Krishna than his own self.
So, he talks over there how, if you are nice telling Uddhava
that if you are only more dear to me,
he says, Uddhava is very different of him. He says, you know, he's more dear to me than
Shiva
or Lakshmi
or even my own self. He's more dear to me than my own self.
So, that is the Lord's affection for the pure.
And it is a Sudurlabha. So then, Samatma Sudurlabha is described. So it is very there, this correlates with Sudurlabha, correlates with Manushyanam Sahasreshu. That
being among few people will ever be able to attain. So that's
yeah.
Now after describing those who surrender, now Krishna wants to those who surrender to something other than him.
Just to write that word.
devotees who have worshipped some other devatas. But if they do that with a pure heart, those devatas guide them to Krishna.
So, we have three examples over here.
The first is of Vallabhacharya. Vallabhacharya is the founder of the Pushti Marg. He was a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he referred to as Vallabhacharya.
So, in his start of his life, he was.
Yes, in the start of his life, he was a Shiva Bhakta. So, the Shiva Bhakta, at one time in his life, he was very frustrated for the certain situation. And he went to the temple of Lord Shiva. And then, at the temple of Lord Shiva, he prayed fervently to Shiva. Great surprise, because of his intense prayer, Lord Shiva appeared right in front of him. What do you want? Please, taken aback. But he had a vision in the Please give me that which you consider to be the most valuable and the best for me. And when he asked that, the Lord gave him a question. So from that time, he became a great devotee of the Lord, and he considered Lord Shiva to be his sort of first production. And also, he also for Vallabha, there are many civilizations in our Sampada and Vallabha, but I also accept Bhagavatam as the highest scripture. They also focus on Krishna as the source of all avatars. And they also, but still most of them, they Vallabhacharya himself focused primarily on Vatsalya. But his son was Vitthaladeva. And Vitthaladeva he associated with the work of Swami Vrindavan. And he writes a lot about Madhurya as well. So here we see, from Shiva's worship, one comes to Krishna's worship. Here we have Keshav Kashmiri. He was a devotee of Saraswati Devi. And Saraswati Devi told him that my greatest blessing to you is not that I make you a world champion pandit, but my greatest blessing is that I have introduced you to my Lord. Now you go and surrender him and you become his devotee. And we have Chandidas. This Chandidas was the worshipper of Chandidevi. So all of you know the story of Chandidas? So a few of you know. So you know, he had a brother who was a Vaishnava, who was a Saligram regularly. And he himself used to worship Chandi. Chandidas was before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also decided to hear his poetry in his life. So, because he was worshiping Chandi, and he had his material blessings profusely, so he was very wealthy. His brother was very, very poor. So, he had a beautiful garden with varieties of flowers there. One day his brother asked him, can I just take one flower to offer to my Saligram? He said, thank you. Entire flower is meant exclusively for Chandi. So take one flower from him. His brother said, sad, but didn't say anything. Next morning when his brother was returning from bathing, he saw this beautiful
flower, this is flowers in the garden, and it's hard. Just mentally pick one flower and offer it to Kali. And then his brother, that is Chandidatma, he took the same flower and offered it to Chandidatma. He was sad his head. And he started chanting Chandidatma, Chandidatma, Sotras. What happened? Chandidatma didn't get the appliance. That means by your wish. What can I do? I asked you, but I was worshiping you for so many years. How is that you became pleased with me? Because you gave me the Mahaprasad of my Lord. He told him the whole story. Can you mean to say that worshiping Vishnu is better than worshiping you? So of course. Vishnu is not just my Lord, he is the Lord of my Lord.
My Lord is Shiva and he is the Lord of my Lord.
Why did you tell this to me earlier? Did you never ask this to me?
You are always asking me, give me this, give me that, give me that.
But today, because you offered me a special flower, so I am giving you a special blessing. From that time, he became a devotee of Krishna. But he considered Chandigarh his guru, he kept his name as Chandigarh. You know this? So, like that, there are stories. It's a well documented historical story, but these personalities were worshippers of the devas. If they build their relation with your heart, with the open spirit of inquiry, and the devas guide them to Krishna. So this is the spirit to talk about. Now, these are the verses we'll discuss now, but we have to understand that there is achintya bhedabhi between devas and Krishna. You know, our philosophy is achintya bhedabhi, but most of us listen to one bhed.
They don't see the way, you know. So, yeah, if you see, what happens is that we always see the difference.
This. So, if you see, when Maharaj met Prabhupada, Maharaj met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was asked, is God personal or impersonal? So, what's Prabhupada? Impersonal. Anybody who considers God to be impersonal is a Mayavadi, that's trying to go to hell. We don't have to do that here, at least we should. So, here, this is a very interesting passage in the Vaihadaranyak Upanishad. In the Upanishad, what happens is, the it's full of question answers, but the answers are never conclusively clear. So that's what the speculator wants. So Yajnavalkya is asked the question. Yajnavalkya is a great thing. He is a very frequent personality to inhabit the Upanishad. And he asks, Pati Deva, how many words are there? The first he says 3,000. Again he says, Kati Deva. Then he says, first 3,003. Then he says, 303. Then 33. 3, 2. And finally 1. And then his whole passage is given as this. There is no difference. There is no difference between them. They are all different. So what does that mean? That means that all the devatas that are there, they are in one sense manifestations of Krishna. They are not Vamsha manifesting of Krishna, they are within Vamsha manifesting. But they are still manifesting of Krishna. Now, Madhvacharya is in a very nice book called Vishnu Tattva Vinirnaya. Vishnu Tattva Vinirnaya, that means establishing the supremacy of Lord Vishnu. So there he describes that how all the other names, all the names of the devatas can be, according to Sanskrit rules of grammar, adjectives. But Narayan can never be an adjective. You see in the
Vishnu Sahasranam,
if you look at Vishnu Sahasranam, Sarva, Sarva, Shiva, Sthanu, Bhuta, Devniravaya. So Shiva. Shiva means auspicious. So Shiva is itself adjective. So what he describes is that if there are some intentions in the scriptures which apparently describe Shiva as supreme, so that is not the personality Shiva who is described. There Shiva is not a noun, Shiva is an adjective. And that is adjective referring to the Supreme Lord. Now Jiva Goswami in the Brahmananda Manandi goes further. And he explains that actually there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. You know that, there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. But he describes that all the devatas who are there in this world, you know, there are original Vishnu Murtis by those names in the spiritual world. So there is a Vishnu Murti by the name Ganesh. There is a Vishnu Murti by the name Kartikeya. then Vishnumurti by the name is coming down. And if at all there is any scriptures where Ganesh is glorified as supreme, it is not this Ganesh.
It is not this Ganesh, it is a Ganesh with the form of Vishnu in the spiritual world.
And actually, this is.
No, we may say that this is just. We are trying to adjust the philosophy or something like that.
But the fact is that Yadhyat Vibhuti Matsattvam Srimad Bhagavatam Lord, that principle is given by Krishna and Bhagavad Gita itself. That every, whatever it is beautiful, it is part of its splendor. So, therefore, even in the Bhagavatam, there are places where Vishnu or Brahma was glorified as supreme. Now, Hiranyakashipu is glorifying Brahma as supreme. Now, they can understand that Hiranyakashipu is flattering. But it's not only in this, actually, if you go to the which canto is the Amrit Mantham is 9th or 9th? Yeah, 9th is Ramayana, 8th canto. So there, in the Amrit Mantham Leela, when the devatas go to Lord Shiva along with Vishnu, they are glorifying Shiva as if he is supreme. So that, what does that mean? Bhakta Thakur, in his commentary called Gaudiya Bhashya, describes that Shiva and Vishnu are vastutaha abhedatma. Vastutaha abhedatma. They are practically non-different. So, therefore, we shouldn't unnecessarily overemphasize the difference between them. Now, a second offense is to consider the two names equal. That is true. But the second offense is occurring for serious sadhaka. For those who are for the same Bhagavan also saying Stovanam Hastovanam Helanam Hastya Parihastyam, all that, what is that called? Sanketam Parihastyam Stovanam Helameva Vaikuntham Amagrahanam Ashesha Vapa Haram Vidu, something like that. So they say even if one is chanting offensively, ridiculing somebody, that can also be. So the 10 offenses are for serious sadhaka. The 10 offenses are not for starters. Therefore, initially, if somebody is worshipping Shiva or Shakti or somebody like that, we don't have to overemphasize at that time that the stop, Shiva is different. We are going to send them. Actually, that same Krishna manifests as Shiva when he takes on the mode of interest. So, the point is that, as Prabhupada said, we should. People who are in the house of the Vedas, we should not confuse them and drive them off. Isn't it? They are in the house of the Vedas, we just have to lead them further into the Vedas. So, now, why this whole complicated system of demigod worship is there at all? Actually, only one God will be there, it will be so nice. There will be no confusion. So, let's understand the system of demigod worship through this word. So, we will tell you this word now. Now, Krishna is telling. What is the difference between these demigod worshippers and the earlier Sakam Bhaktas? The difference is that for the Sakam Bhaktas, they have come to the Supreme Lord and these have gone away from the Supreme Lord. So, they have gone away from the Supreme Lord. Why? Prakritya Niyataha Svaya. Prakritya, why? Because according to their nature, they are attracted to a particular form for worship. And how is it that some Artho, Jigyasa, Ratharthi is able to come to Krishna? It's primarily because of some Ajnasa Kriti or some Bhakta Sangha that he is able to come to Krishna. So, now they start worshipping the Devatas. Now, what does Krishna do when somebody starts worshipping the Devatas? See, in Christianity, in Islam, in Judaism, there is a lot of condemnation of other gods. Now, in the Ten Commandments only it is said that your God is a jealous God and you should not worship any other God before Him. So, you should not worship any other God before Him. So, that now this is a very primitive idea. First of all, it gives the idea that there is one Supreme God and there are other gods existing also who are competing with Him. And secondly, they are all competing, This worship is meant for somebody else who is going to take my worship. You should not take it. So, it's a primitive idea. And secondly, it portrays God as a jealous God. Now, and Rupa Goswami is talking about Krishna as a jealous lover, that is a very lofty stage. You cannot compare these two.
There is no comparison between them.
He is talking Krishna as a jealous lover, that is at a level of rasa, that is not at a level of tattva. At a level of tattva, at a level of tattva means, see, Krishna as God is not concerned with maintaining his status as the exclusive object of worship. Krishna is concerned only with elevating people according to their levels. So, Krishna is not concerned with maintaining his status. I should be the exclusive object of worship. Nobody else should be worshiping. No. Whoever you want to worship by worshiping, if you can get elevated, so, did I discuss here about how the Vedic cultures offer us user-friendly spirituality? I discussed that, isn't it? Did I mention this? So, basically, in the spiritual path, there is something, the sadhya and sadhu. There is a goal and there is a means. So, in most other religions, both are fixed. Sadhya is Allah. The sadhan is, there are the five instructions. Fast and Kandan and go to Mecca and offer namaz and do charity and accept no God except Allah. So, the sadhya is fixed, the sadhana is fixed. Now, this is good, but what happens is, though we cannot deal with this, they are left out. So, what happens is, in the other religions, Krishna only has given the other religions, but the way those religions exist, you know, the entry criteria for coming into the house of religion is quite steep. You do this, you come inside, other you can get out. Only just get out, go to hell. And don't just go to hell, you will send you. That is their idea. Of course, this is a fanatical version of those religions, but it's unfortunate that the fanatical versions of many religions are their predominant versions of Christianity. So, in the Vedic culture, you know, exclusive devotion to the Supreme Lord is not made the entry level criteria for coming to the house of religion. Yes, that is the supreme goal, but that is not the entry level criteria. In the house of Vedas is very vast. In the house of Vedas, there is a central altar, there is a central treasury. And there, if you want to go, there we need exclusive devotion to the one supreme God. There it is Sarva Dharma Antarishpati, we have to go. But it is not that the entrance only Sarva Dharma Antarishpati. No, here, whatever Dharma is suitable, you can follow that. Just come in. So, Krishna has created a Vedas system, worship system, so that people can worship according to their moods. They can find a personality, a form of worship, a sadhya and a sadhan that gels with their nature. And this way they can get elevated. So that's why if you look at this, the Judeo-Christian, the Semitic version of God, God is a Lord, worship any other God. But here Krishna is telling in the next verse that if you start worshipping some other God, I strengthen your faith. So, how do we strengthen that faith? Just a bit. Prabhupada, in the translation, we recite this verse first. Let me read the translation and I'll say. Yo yo yam yam tanam bhaktaha sarayarchitum icchati tasya tasya chalam shraddham tameva vidadhamyam. Interestingly, there is no mention of superfluous in this translation. That is Prabhupada's compassionate addition. So, he says, how does Krishna give us faith? In the language of faith, as superfluous. Now, Krishna gives faith also by directing that person to read the Puranas in those particular modes. The Puranas are also meant to give faith for that worshipper according to his prakrityanya rahasvaya. So, Krishna strengthens his faith. And what does Krishna do by this? That's this. Strengthening his faith, at least they have accepted a higher authority and they started some process of religion. Then what happens after that? Tataya shraddhaya yukta satya radhana mihate labhate chitatah kama mayaiva vilikandhitan. So, with this faith, which is given by me, they worship that particular devata. And they get the fruit, but the fruits are also given by me. So, as an example to understand this is not demigod worship, is the extension of the prodigal son analogy. All of us know the prodigal son analogy. You know, we use the prodigal son analogy, but we use it in a very attenuated and simplistic sense. And the Bible has a lot of complications in it. What happens is in the prodigal son, there's not one son, but there are two sons. And when the second son comes back, and the first son, one son, there is the father. Second son goes away. And second son comes back home. The father is very happy. Oh, my son has come back. And he tells, he's the ruler of a village. He tells the village, please go and cut a bull and let us celebrate the return of my father. Then the other father, brother gets angry and says, you know, I was living all along with you. You never killed a bull to celebrate by being with you. For me, why are you killing for him?
So, actually, Prabhupada writes in one letter
that Christianity and Islam are influenced, our religions, they are primarily influenced by Rajoguna and Tamoguna.
So, so we will discuss about them more in the 17th chapter. That is the minimum 3 modes.
But here, our emphasis is, we will take the same prodigal son story. So the father is a king, and the son quarrels with the father and leaves him. Son leaves home, and the son not only leaves home, he goes out of the freedom. And out of the freedom, you know, he is struggling, working for some landlord, struggling and earning some living. Then finally he gets fed up and he comes back to the father's freedom. But he's not yet ready to come back to the father's palace. He's not ready to come back home to live with the father. But the father is happy that at least he's coming back to the freedom. So when he sees that my son is inclined to come back to the freedom, the father sends one of his ministers. The father tells him, his minister, you go and you offer him an employment. You give him a job and you pay him. So what will happen by that? He will be under your care. And because you are under me, he will be under my care in that. So, in that sense, the demigod worship is an extension of Krishna's mercy for those who cannot accept his direct mercy. Now, of course, what the father would expect is, the son has come back home. But because the son is not ready for that, the father says, it's not that if you don't accept me, I will kick you out of my kingdom. No, I will still accept you in my kingdom, and I will make sure that you can stay comfortably. So that's what Krishna's system is. His system of demigod worship is primarily to take care of the conditioned soul and bring about the gradual elevation. And as the son becomes more and more amiable, then the father will approach the son, or the minister will guide the son to the father back, and then he will return home. That is the idea behind demigod worship. But the difference between demigod worship and Krishna worship is that because the demigods themselves are temporary, the fruits that one gets from them are also temporary. So Krishna is now, the minister may give some salary to the son, but where is the salary coming from? It comes from the king. Where the devatas may give some fruit, the devatas' fruits are coming from Krishna. So that's how Krishna has created the system, and it is a system of compassion. But a system of compassion can become a system of confusion if we don't know the argument. So now, this is another point to understand. We often use analogy of Sanatana Dharma is like an unabridged dictionary. And the other religions are like the pocket dictionary. Now this analogy can sound to be very self-serving. But you know, from a user's point of view, the pocket dictionary is much easier to use than the unabridged dictionary. Why? Because if you go to unabridged dictionary, for one word there will be maybe 35 minutes. And you know, you are reading one sentence, you forget the book and say, did the dictionary or did the meaning apply over here? And sometimes, some meanings are contradictory. Some meanings are completely contradictory. For example, there are many English words which have two meanings and they are contradictory. Now, for example, there is a word called epithet. Now, the normal meaning of the word epithet is glorification or praise. But another meaning of the word epithet is sarcastic meaning is insult. Same word has opposite meaning. So actually, the unabridged dictionary requires an experienced reader to use. If the reader is not experienced, what is going to happen? The unabridged dictionary will lead to a lot of confusion. So for us, the Vedic literature like the unabridged dictionary and Prabhupada's books are like the pocket dictionary.
So Prabhupada tells us what to do. Okay, this whole confusion is there. Prabhupada does not save us from all that confusion and brings us to
directly to Krishna Loka.
So, we are in Mayapur. Then we also had come to Kharagpur.
So at that time I had asked him this question. And Prabhupada, many Indians, they are very easily able to develop faith in Krishna. But for them to develop faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is more difficult. Because they have not heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a childhood. He says, but I have seen that many non-Indian devotees, because they heard about Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya both together at one time, and they also heard about how Lord Chaitanya has more verses. So often their faith in Lord Chaitanya is more than the faith of the Indian devotees in Lord Chaitanya. So what can we do to help Indian devotees develop faith in Lord Chaitanya? Then he also tried, that is one of the advantages of being born outside India.
So he said, if you are born outside India, you are saved not only of this confusion, but you are also saved of the traffic jam of 33 million devatas. It's not just a traffic jam of 33 million devatas, there are many more millions which are coming in of so many gods are coming up.
So actually, now,
as you have seen, when you start studying Bhagavad Gita, it's quite complicated, isn't it? Because for us, we can say, we are teaching Bhagavad Gita. Sarvadharmas prasthijamamekam sharanam rachanam.
For us to quote a few verses from Bhagavad Gita stand alone is very easy.
A few verses we can quote from here and there.
And it's not improper, because those are the conclusive verses of the Gita. But really, if you have to go through the systematic flow of the Gita, it's quite intricate. So, the unabridged dictionary can be used only by experiences. And that's why the Manusmriti says that the Vedic scripture should be studied only by Brahmanas. Now, that is not like, it's not just giving an intellectual monopoly to the Brahmanas. It is to save people from being misguided. Because the Vedic liturgies can very easily find contradictions. For example, in the original Vedas, there are quite a few statements which talk about animal sacrifice. The animals are sacrificed to it. And we follow regular principles, this can easily appear to be contradictory to most people. It's not contradictory if you understand the ultimate purpose. So, now, what is the system of demigod worship? We discussed this example in Aisha Bishop's book also. If a father has two sons, both of them get result of 60%. But one of them is habituated getting 80%, another is habituated to get 40%. So what happens? For one who has got 40% and regularly and now 60%, father says, Shabash! The other who used to get 80% and now has got 60%, father says, Shabash! What are you doing? So, he may say, what is this? I also want to say, Master, why are you saying Shabash? So, like that, Krishna only has given the Puranas. He talks about Ganesh Puja, Shakti Puja, Shiva Puja. And Krishna only is telling over here, Alpa Medhasa. You are fooling, you worshiping me. So, what is good and what is bad depends on what is our level. So, for one who is at 40%, 60% is good. For one who is 80%, 60% is bad. Like that, for one who is a materialist, atheist, non believer, for him, demigod worship is good. But for somebody who is like Arjuna, who can practice pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, for him, demigod worship is bad. So, there is neither competition nor confusion, there is progression. There is neither competition nor confusion, there is progression with meditation. That's why the acharyas should leave us first. What are progressions? Seventeenth chapter, that's the question. Bar question. We are here also asked about. We'll discuss that question in 17th chapter. So now, why has Krishna given this multi-level, so this is like, it's a multi-level worship. Yeah. Supreme Lord, who takes the motive of the person? The superpower in the heart. Super soul in the heart of the devata and super soul in the heart of the worshipper. The super soul works in cooperation. So super soul is there in both heart and super soul knows. See, the super soul knows that Dhruva Maharaj is going. Narad Muni will tell Dhruva Maharaj, you worship Narayan. And that same Banasur is going, Narad Muni will tell him, you worship Shiva. So Narad Muni knows, you know, who is, what is best for them. How does he know? That's based on the guidance of the super soul. So, the Vedic system, as I said, is not competition or confusion, it is progression. It is a monotheistic religion, and a monotheistic is only one God. Although it is monotheistic, it is multi-level. Ultimately, it accepts one God. But there is multi-level worship. It is monotheistic, but multi-level worship. And what is the purpose of this multi-level worship? It offers two things. There is a unique concern for the individuality of the worshipper. As the worshipper is an individual. He has no psychophysical nature. And based on that, he has his lifetime to look like. Accordingly, the spiritual path is tailor-made for him. There is individuality of the worship. That is seen over here. Secondly, the worshipable, that is Supreme Lord, he manifests a great flexibility in making himself active. So when a person is worshipping Ganesh, it is Krishna only who is making himself accessible to Ganesh. So, it is, now that doesn't mean that Ganesh and Krishna are the same, but Ganesh is empowered by Krishna to act as his proxy, to act as his representative for accepting worship. Okay? So this is about demigod worship. Okay, the question is that do the devatas facilitate the materialistic desires of the demigod worshippers or do they elevate? Generally, the first function of the demigod is to facilitate the material desire. And by the fulfillment of the material desire, not only is the faith of the worshipper developed in that particular devata, the faith is developed in the whole Vedic system. And once the faith in the Vedic system is developed, the person becomes open to higher goals of religion. Because by seeing that by doing yajna, after and kam do come, what happens is they develop the whole culture. And it's not going, okay, I'll let you get over moksha. Will a worshipper get infatuated by the fulfillment of the material desire? It is possible, but that infatuation is already there. The condition soul by default is materialistic. Just like sometimes some devotees feel that if I do a lot of service, then people will glorify me and then I'll become proud. Well, it is not that after doing the service you become proud. The pride is already there. After doing the service, we get a reason to express it. I mean, it is not that before doing the service you were humble and after you became proud. The pride is a disease which is already present. So, we cannot just wish away that pride. What we will do is, by the entering that service and are pleasing the Vaishnavas, Krishna purifies our heart. So like that, the material desires are anyway there in the heart. And if they are not fulfilled a religious need, people will endeavor to fulfill them by non-religious means. And if they are going to fulfill them by non-religious means, then they will never move towards God. So better let them fulfill their desires by religious means. Have they become infatuated? Yes, that's possible. But it's not that they are becoming infatuated because of religion. They become infatuated because of their material desire. And generally, especially if somebody is following dharma, over a period of time, one starts getting a realization. If you realize your own dharma, one starts inquiring from something higher. Yes, for the traditional system of worship, as Krishna says that in the 9th chapter we talk about demigod worship again, and here he says that Tetam Bhukva Sarvalokam Shyam Shine Punyam Adhi Lokam Shyam. So they go up and come down, it happens for a lot of lifetimes also. So it's slow, no doubt. About heavenly plans that remind me, Mahavir had asked a question yesterday that what determines whether a deviated yogi goes to heaven or whether he is born in a devotee family. When you say with a little devotion advancement, a lot of devotion advancement, what does that mean, little and lost? What it primarily means is how much material desire there is. if he has a lot of material desires remaining, then the Lord, in order to have him fulfill those material desires, takes him to heaven. And what happens is, he can become infatuated by heaven also. But because he has tasted transcendence, he has practiced spiritual life, he has tasted transcendence ethnicity. So, those, that material enjoyment in heaven will not infatuate him, will not make him addicted, but it will make him exhausted. And then when he comes back to the earth, he will be more ready to start practicing spiritual life. So let's move forward now. This is Jhanvi. So this is about demigod worship. And more or less the same thing will be discussed in 9th chapter. And there will be move ahead fast. We won't spend so much time on that at that time. Let's go to the next section. So Krishna is talking about two kinds of people who don't surrender to him. One is the demigod worshipper. The second is the Mayavadi. Avyaktam vyaktim apannam anyante mama buddhayah param bhavam ajananto avyayam anuttamam. So, these two categories of people, the demigod worshippers and the impersonalists, they are in between those who surrender and those who don't surrender. Surrender to Krishna, who don't surrender to Krishna. These are in between the categories. And Krishna will later on categorize that are the impersonalists higher or are the demigod worshippers higher? Who are higher? Really? What is the reason? Okay, let's not do our own reasoning. Let's look at Krishna's verdict only. What is Krishna telling over here? Alpa medhasa and abuddhayaha. It's very clear over here. Alpavedasa is less intelligence, Abuddhaya is practically no intelligence. So now, we will have to see this a little more carefully. But normally speaking, impersonalists are transcendentalists. And like earlier we discussed, Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga is higher than Karma Yoga. And below Karma Yoga is Karma Kanda. So demigod worshippers are normally Karma Kandi. And Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So normal, from the normal hierarchy point of view, the impersonalists are much higher. Isn't it? They are either Ashtanga Yogis or Jnana Yogis. And the demigod worshippers are Karma Kanda. So we accept this point, that the impersonalists are higher than the demigod worshippers. There is no doubt about that. But there are two crises, there are two systems of classification. One system of classification is by, it's from the material point of view, from the material mood point of influence. And the other classification is from the point of attitude towards Krishna. So attitude towards Krishna means, let's take another example to understand it. Social service. Are they better than ordinary karmis or what? Obviously better, isn't it? Ordinary karmis are just after their own investigation. During social service, they are ready to sacrifice their own time, their own hard-earned money, their hard-earned time, hard work. Their time, energy, for things and good things. So surely, those who do social service are better than ordinary. But, the social service is an expression generally in the mode of goodness. It can be partially in the mode of passion, if it is motivated by wanting one's known name to be spread. But still social service is higher than self-gratification. And we will see this in the 12th chapter, where Krishna will say that, he will give multiple options for us, fix your mind on me, or otherwise render this Prasanna Bhakti, render service to me. And the last one which he gives is, offer the fruits of your work for some good cause. The good cause through our experience is social service. So social service is higher than sense gratification. Why? Because certainly more sattva guna is required than for sense gratification. So from the mode's point of view, surely social service is valid. Now where it becomes a problem is, when social service is seen as a substitute for yogic service, or not a substitute for yogic service, it is seen as a superior alternative to devotional service. Then it becomes offensive. Then it becomes offensive. And then it becomes a serious problem. Such an ancient idea was, you know, Shankaracharya is Mayavadi. But Shankaracharya has rarely ever been in social service. Why? This is one of the, I'm diverting a little bit, but it's an important diversion to understand the positions taken by our acharyas on certain issues. See, historically, the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas had a very clear division of labor. The Brahmanas, their role was to teach. And the Kshatriyas' role was to manage, to protect, to administer. And the two roles would sometimes overlap, but generally they would be separate. That's why when, you know, when the Sri Vaishnavas in South India and Muslims attacked, she was not just left the temple and went away. They continued their worship. And you see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he wanted Rupa Sanatana Goswami to be, they were Brahman and Brahmana family, and he wanted them to act Brahmanism. So he did not tell them, you know, you rise against, you make a conspiracy and you rise against Rahu Pensha and you become the king. So he just renounced the world itself. So in general, Vaishnava Acharya adopted transcendental approach because their approach is mostly Brahmanic. Now, of course, there are other precedents also. You know, there were when the Vijayanagara Empire was established. So Vijayanagara Empire was established about 400 years before Shivaji Maharaj's empire in Maharashtra. And there, at that time, Sri Vaishnava, the Madhva Vaishnava, and the Shankaras, all three came together and unitedly supported the Jayaram and Krishna Devaraya and all the other kings who were there. And they offered a very strong resistance against this nine dynasty for almost 350 years. So there are examples when there are emergencies, the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas may also fall. But in general, the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas roles are different. Now, in his critique of Christianity, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur makes a very insightful point. He says that Christianity is characterized by an acute confusion about the difference between material and spiritual values. He says that they don't understand the difference between material and spiritual values. So because in Christianity there is not much description of God and His pastimes and His activities. So they think primarily our way of expressing our love for God is through humanity and compassion to others. So that's why the Christians do a lot of missionary activities. Missionary activities with open schools, they will open hospitals, they will do free food. And they, of course, they say that they are doing it because this is an expression of our love for Jesus. But it is also because they want to get people converted to their religion. So now historically in India, none of the spiritual leaders, whether it is Ramacharya, Madhvacharya or Shankaracharya, they never focused on the material welfare of people because the kings are supposed to take care of that. The kings are supposed to take care of that. But over the centuries when Islam ruled India and subsequently the British also came and exploited India, so actually, 1,000 years ago, India was not a poor country. India was not a poor country. India was very wealthy, and that's why foreigners came to India anyway. But almost after 1,000 years of, 800 years of exploitation of India, India was reduced to a lot of poverty. And when the Christian missionaries came, initially they tried a lot to convert people intellectually. But it didn't work much. No, the not many people are converted. Then they decided, so going to these intelligent people, we'll just go to poor people. We'll give them food, we'll give them money, and we'll convert them. And they started converting a lot of people. So, at that time, what happened was, Swami Vivekananda, who had just come from America and was very famous because of the Hindu conference, he felt that all these Hindus should stay in the Hindu religion. That's why he started Ramakrishna Mission, and he started a lot of social service. Now, statistics point of view, Ramakrishna Mission has done more for the social service than Mother Teresa's institution, Sister Rosetta. But what happens is, the media image of a young woman from a European country coming to serve the starving poor people of India, that has tremendous appeal. And Mother Teresa, for all her nobility, in her almost 60 to 70 years that she stayed in India, not once did she speak anything good about Hinduism. Not once. So she contributed, probably intentionally, maybe unintentionally, in perpetuating the negative stereotype of India as a poverty-stricken country, rather than as a spiritually rich country. So what happened? So, now of course Mother Teresa was a little later, but the Christian missionary work had started earlier only. So Swami Vivekananda felt that, you know, we have to make sure that Hindus take care of themselves materially also. So what had happened was, why is this need there? Because the Kshatriya kings were on it. So then, he had that genuine concern, which is not bad, but in his concern, what he did was, he started criticizing devotees. And he made a lot of outrageous statements. You see, basically, he's seen as a spiritualist, but to a large extent, he was a nationalist also. And he started making very offensive statements like, people are starving in this country. For all you want to water some plant, water a plant, brinjal plant, you'll get a brinjal to eat. Why water the tulsi plant? You won't get anything to eat. So, this is just one statement. He made a lot of statements. And basically, what he did was, he minimized devotional service and he glorified humanity. And this was the time when Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and Prabhupada were living. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, if you see, he started with Sanyas in 1990. And Vivekananda had gone to America in 1893 and then came back. So, this is what the Ramakrishna Paramahansa was about. So, they were at a peak and most of them were in Calcutta. Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktisiddhanta, they were also in Calcutta. So, it was, in fact, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and Swami Vivekananda were distant cousins. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is Kedarnath Dutta, Swami Vivekananda is Narendranath Dutta. But unfortunately, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was older to him. But it seems they never met much. Otherwise, they would have called from India, this would have changed. But anyway, so basically, what happened was, we have to see this from two perspectives, that's what I'm saying now. That in one sense, his intention was good. He said, you know, in this way, converted to Christianity, just for humanitarian purpose. Now we should channelize the Hindu religious energy to make the Hindus do humanitarian work. Now doing humanitarian work is not against the principle of Hinduism. But what is wrong is to equate social service with devotional service. Or to say that social service is better than devotional service. No, but therefore, because as Ramakrishna, they don't have much gorgeous temples with deities. Why waste money on deity worship? Even the poor people. Because he only coined all these popular and controversial slogans of Manav Seva hi Madhav Seva hai, Nav Seva hi Narayan Seva hai, Jan Seva hi Janardan Seva hai. There are a lot of slogans in there. So now, see, our acharyas are very careful to preserve this example. It's not Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he heavily criticized the social service. But at the same time, when they would go on yatras, if you would tell the grahasthas, if there are beggars, you give them food or you give them money. And if they would not give, you would criticize them. You would criticize them. As a householder, you would give them to the child. The child doesn't mean you have to go only to temple. There's a poor beggar approaches you, see him child. So Prabhupada also started food for life. And we can say, what Prabhupada's compassion, not material? You are giving them prasad. And he started food for life. But the point here is that, you know, social service is not bad. But when social service is portrayed as a substitute or an alternative or a superior alternative to devotional service, that becomes a difference. And that deserves to be criticized. That's what our acharyas have done. So now when Radharath Maharaj started this Bhaktivedanta Hospital and now they started maintaining. So what was the scheme? He gave a beautiful lecture in Pune. He said that just as we can use Yukta Vairagya, we use science with the spirit of Yukta Vairagya. And we can do scientific preaching of Krishna consciousness. So he said, the most powerful way of Yukta Vairagya is blending humanitarian compassion with devotional service. If we can blend the two, then the kind of effect of preaching that we have is unparalleled. And in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, if people are sick, we offer them treatment at a reasonable rate, not as high as also offer. And because people are in need, they become attracted. And then they become able to come back to the way to do whatever we tell them to do. But the challenge in any Yukta Vairagya is what? That the Vairagya has to be there first. Otherwise what happens? Only the Yukta remains, the Vairagya goes away. That's why always there has to be caution. So when so what Arahant Maharaj told is that, that if we ever saw a sarvati on hospital anywhere else, or we start midday meal, we have to make sure that this doesn't become our main entity. And this is not what we are known in society for always. That's very, very clear. So, if you have a vibrant Vaishnava community, then to protect the vibrant Vaishnava community, to have the goodwill of society, to do something like that is not only okay, it will be necessary. It will be necessary. So, again, we look at social service from two perspectives. One perspective is, from the moral point of view, it is better than systems verification. But from the attitude towards Krishna point of view, if one is offensive, then what happens? The social service is higher, it becomes lower. It becomes lower because one is offensive. You know, the Catholic Church used to do a lot of social service. And that's how they take a moral high ground. In the West, now the atheists are becoming more and more aggressive also. So now the atheists have started their own humanitarian organization. And last year, the amount of charity the atheists did is more than what the Catholic Church is. And you know what, that their charitable organization slogan is, in double quotes, God sends calamity, we send remedy. So God in double quotes. So the remedy is in social service, but it's a demonstrated. So this is how it can be ended. Similarly, with respect to personal issue, we are discussing about what in this context. However, Krishna is calling the person is Abuddhaya. Now, if they were just seeking the Brahma Jyoti, that's not a problem. But if they think the Brahma Jyoti to be higher than Krishna and Krishna's form to be a temporary illusion manifestation of the Brahma Jyoti, then they become offended. And then their position becomes lower than the God. That's right, sir. The level of a person is driven by both factors. The situation with respect to the mode and the situation with respect to the attitude towards it. And among the two, which is more important? Attitude towards it. Just like we say, between sin and offense, which is more dangerous? Offense. Well, because sin is with respect to the mode. Offense is with respect to Krishna. So let's go ahead. Of course. I class and diluted my avatar. Avyaktam vyaktam apam. There's no, it's not this, not innocent Brahma avatar. There's high class my avatar. That's all. That will be referred to in 12.5.6. Play show this prasasyam avyaktam. For the impersonalist, progress is very slow and troublesome. Those impersonalists are Brahmavadis. They are not offenders. Okay? So now let's move forward. Now, Krishna in the next verse explains why they are wrong. So this verse is telling that they are abuddhaya. Next verse will describe why they are abuddhaya. Naham prakash sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudho yam nami janati soko mamajam avyayam. So it is that they are Krishna's internal potency covered. And that's why they are not known. Now Krishna is your yoga maya samavitaha. So why is he your yoga maya? Because he is talking about the covering on himself. He is not talking about the covering on those people. What covers Krishna is yoga maya. What covers us is mahamaya. So, yoga maya samavitaha. And these people, they don't understand. Now when he is talking about this is not just referring to the previous word. It refers generically to all those people who don't understand. Because yoga maya covers them. And what do they not understand him about it? It's ajam avyayam. Right? I'm unborn and I'm imperishable. So this refers to the previous word. What is it? Avyaktam vyaktum apanam. At one time it was the impersonal absolute was there. Now it became personal, temporary. You say, no, this form, I am ajam and avyayam. Unborn and imperishable. And then, after describing this, Krishna elaborates on this, that, you know, although I am not visible to everyone because yoga maya, because I am covered, because yoga maya covers. But the yoga maya doesn't cover my knowledge. The yoga maya covers those. So that is illustrated in the elaboration of the next verse. Yoga maya does not cover Krishna. Yoga maya covers Krishna from our vision. It is not that yoga maya covers Krishna person. When I said earlier yoga maya covers Krishna and Mahamaya covers us, that means what? Yoga maya covers Krishna for our vision, and Mahamaya covers not only Krishna, she also creates the illusion by this material world appears enjoyed. Mahamaya does this both, Rakshamastika and Auramastika, both Shakti does it. Rakshamastika makes us forget that I am, sorry, Auramastika makes us forget that I am the soul, and Rakshamastika makes us think that I am a young man. He's trying to enjoy this. Like that. Yes? Yogamaya is because Krishna can never be covered. One reason is for Krishna, Yogamaya and Mahamaya both are same. That's the first point. The second point is that actually if you look at the next verse, now what Krishna is talking about is that he himself, he makes himself inaccessible to you. He makes himself inaccessible to you. Why? Because he wants to reveal himself only to his bhakta. That means the bhakta maunya later on he will tell that. So, when he decides to make himself inaccessible, that decision he implements through yoga maya. Mahamaya creates the illusions of this world, by which, you know, temporary bodies of earth, water, fire, air, and look very attractive to us. These sense objects look irresistible to us. That is Mahamaya. But when anything is connected with Krishna, that is the pursuit of yoga maya. Vedaham samati tani vartamanani cha arjuna bhavishyami cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashchana. Me, no one knows. That I am not covered by this maya, but living entities are covered. Even the pure devotees don't know Krishna fully. No one knows me fully, in the rishis, in the bhaktas, but they know me enough so that they can love me. But I know everything and everyone. Krishna is talking about omniscience. Krishna gave a hint of this in Bhagavad Gita Vaishnava Janmaya Sanskar. I have many past lives and I remember them, but this is a much broader statement. So I know everything Krishna. This chapter that the bhakti chapter, so Krishna is explaining his position here. Now let's move forward. Now after describing this, so Krishna has described those who surrender, those who don't surrender, those who surrender, and those who surrender to something other than him. Now Krishna will describe how all these souls come into illusion and how they can come out of illusion. In the next verse. So
द्वंद्वमोहेन भारत सर्वभूतानि सम्मोहं सर्वेयान्ति परं तप.
So sarga, sarga means the start of creation. From that time onwards, the sequence, ichha dvesha, attachment and aversion is there. And because of attachment and aversion, what happens? There is dvandva which comes. I like this, I don't like this. And because of that dvandva, moha comes. And therefore moha comes, some moha, complete illusion. From that illusion comes bondage. So in this way, all living entities are bound in this material world. Now where does the ichhavesh come from? The ichhavesh comes from either the previous kalpa, when the soul was there, or it comes from the spiritual world. And then he describes, okay, this is how the souls are bound, how will they get to play? Yesham tvantagatam papam, jananam punya karmanam.
ये द्वंद्व मोह निर्मुक्ता भजन्ते माम दृढव्रता।
So he is telling that
by practicing punya karmana, this punya karmana is actually bhakti unmukh punya karma. By that they will be able to come towards it. So at least the lower modes have to subside a little bit. Because then the lower modes, it's very difficult for them to become my worshippers. They will go to the demigods. Whereas they get to do some bhakti unmukh sakrati, they get the association of my devotees, then what will happen? They will be able to become dvandva moha nirmukta. They will become free from the illusion by, created by duality. And then they will be able to become my devotee. Bhajante maam dhruvataha. Become determined devotees. This dhruvata refers to a person who has gone beyond the sakam bhakti stage. And he has come to a slightly advanced stage. He will not be the kevala bhakti, but at least the pradhani guru bhakti. Now, after describing this, in the next verse, Krishna will start with a new topic, which will be built in the next chapter. But the theme is still the same. A theme is how knowledge of Krishna liberates. How once we know Krishna and take shelter of Krishna, we liberate. We get liberated. But this is a new category of it. A new category of devotees is described over here.
Jara marana mokshaya mama shritya tantiye. Hey Brahma Tadvido Krishnam Ajahnam Karma Shakilam.
So this is a moksha kami
Dharamarana mokshaya.
Deva moksha. Now, if you remember, in the 13th chapter, Krishna will be talking about Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi Dukkha Doshan Darshanam. And that section is for the Jnanis. So the Jnanis understand it. These are the miseries and the symptoms of Jnana. 13th chapter also, the Jnana section will be talking. So, here this person understands why Jnana is so miserable. Old age and death are miserable. I want to leave from this. And for that, to shelter Krishna. Therefore, this can be Jnana Mishra Bhakti or it can also be Yoga Mishra Bhakti. By Yoga Mishra Bhakti, person one may also practice yoga in order to get relief from old age. Now, people practice yoga to prolong their youth and to avoid old age or minimize the effects of old age. And especially because this verse is immediately following this chapter, which talks about Yoga Mishra Bhakti. Maam Ashritya, they take shelter of me. Now, after taking shelter of me, what happens to Shaitan? Te Brahma Tadvidhu. They will understand that Brahma completely. And Adhyatma, they will understand Karma Chakilam. They will understand Karma, they will understand Adhyatma. And now Krishna was describing this, drop a few more terms, which immediately Arjuna will become a Sarnathan Krishna. What are these terms? So here he has dropped three terms, which Krishna will ask in the next chapter. Brahma, Adhyatma and Karma. And the next verse will drop three more terms and one more concept which Arjuna will ask. So Arjuna will ask seven questions in the next chapter. So let's try this first.
Tadhi bhutadhi daivam maam tadhi yajyam ca yevidu prayana kale picha maam yevidu yukta cetasaha.
Krishna has given one message which is repeat it as it is being, as Bhagavata is going forward, the depth of that vision is becoming greater and greater. So in 2.72 also he talked about the last moment. Esha te brahmiti partha nainam prapya vimuyati sitva asyam antakaleti brahma nirvana mishati. That was the first mention of antakal in the Bhagavad Gita. That if you remember, if you are sure it exists in the antakal, then you will attain Brahma Nirvana. Now Krishna brings the same reference back.
they will be like this, if they are like this, prayana kale kichamam, they will know me even at the time of death. And if they understand me as adibhuta, adidhaiva and adiyam. And in this way, Krishna has not explained adibhuta, adidhaiva, adiyam. But basically in this chapter, he prioritizes as knowledge of the Absolute. So Krishna has basically explained how he is the source and the sustenance of all of creation. And he is the ultimate goal of the various paths. And those who are apparently going on paths other than him are misdirected in their endeavors. And he also gives a process by how they can be redirected. So immediately Arjuna will pick up and ask questions based on this. So we'll discuss a few verses from the next chapter also before we enter. So let's do a quick review of this chapter. So the theme of this chapter is by knowledge of Krishna, we can fix our mind on Krishna. So, first Krishna is the knowledge about himself, how he disposes of everything, how he pervades everything, and then he says, how after getting knowledge about him, why do people don't surrender? Because they are covered by the moat, they don't do it. And then, if they have inimical attitudes, they won't surrender. If they have devotion attitudes, they will surrender. And he talks about how he only creates systems for people to surrender to others, if that's what they want, if they will not. If they misunderstand, then they are in trouble. And then lastly, he talks about how he knows everything and he is never covered and by taking shelter of him. So why is Krishna talking about Ichha Desh Sukham Dukkham and then Ichha Desh Samuthena and then Desham Svartya Sapapam? So he was talking about most mainly for Maam Ashishtu Yatanyi. The 28th verse is Maam Ashishtu. So one who understands that I am bound in this world and I am suffering, he takes shelter of him. By taking shelter of him, he is transferred in this world. That's the 7th chapter. Now, immediately, there's a link between this and the 8th chapter. So, 8th chapter will be over here. So, 8th chapter has 28 verses, slightly shorter than this, which is 30 verses. So, Krishna answers Arjuna's first 6 questions very briefly in just 2 verses. 2 verses are questions, 2 verses are answers. Then, the 5th question. The 7th question of Arjuna was how to remember him. That Krishna answers in 5 verses after that. And then he talks about different ways to remember. He talks about remembrance by Yoga Vishya Bhakti, remembrance by Shita Bhakti, and remembrance by comparing the nature of material and spiritual worlds, and remembrance by being concluded by remembrance by Bhakti Yoga is easier than by Ashtanga Yoga. The whole theme of the chapter is remembrance of Krishna at the time of death. That's the Prabhupada time in this chapter, attain the Supreme Being. So, if you are writing this down now, just a couple of minutes. No, 8.1 and 2 will ask the question.
అర్జున వాచ బ్రహ్మాభిమాధ్యాత్మం కిం కర్మ పురుషోత్తమా అధియోగం కిం ప్రోక్తం దైవం కిముచ్యతే. అధ్యం కథం కోత్ర దేహేస్మిన్ మధుసూదన ప్రయాణ కాలే చ కథం జ్ఞేయోస్మి నియతాత్మభిః.
సో యూ సమ్ టైమ్ వాట్ హ్యాపెన్స్ ఇస్ యాజ్ అ ప్రీచర్ యు విల్ బొంబార్డ్ విత్ 10 క్వశ్చన్స్ అండ్ వాట్ హ్యాపెన్స్ that we have limited time, so what we will do is, we will choose the question which we know is the most important for the devotee to know. I will focus on that alone. So what Krishna does is, Arjuna asks these several long questions, and you know, answering each of these questions can become a full chapter. So Krishna gives a sutra-like answer to six questions, and the most important question is, how to remember at the time of that, and he wrote the full chapter talking with that. So Krishna is very pragmatic. ప్రభుపాద భగవద్గీత ఎమర్జెన్సీ బుక్ మై ఎమర్జెన్సీ బుక్ డాక్టర్ ఇస్ వెయిటింగ్ సో దే డూ గోయింగ్ టు ప్రాపర్ డిస్కషన్ బట్ ఈస్ ఆర్ వెరీ టెక్నికల్ టర్మ్స్ అండ్ ఆఫన్ ద ఆన్సర్స్ గివ్ అ లాట్ ఆఫ్ ఆన్సర్స్ ఫర్ దర్ విచ్ ఆర్ నాట్ గివెన్ హియర్.
శ్రీ భగవాన్ వాచ అక్షరం బ్రహ్మ పరమం స్వభావో అధ్యాత్మముచ్యతే భూతభావోద్భవకరో సర్గః కర్మ సంహితః.
సో నౌ as usual, whenever there are technical words, there are references to Ramacharya about the meanings of those words. So, Aksharam Brahma Paramam. So, what are the questions? What is this Brahma? So, Kinta Brahma was the question. So, Aksharam Brahma Paramam is the answer. So, generally, the Ramacharya says to me, Vishnu Chakrabhu says that Brahma is referring to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Akshara is infallible and Parman is supreme. Supreme infallible personality. Prabhupada takes Parman to mean transcendental, not supreme. Param and Parman. Similar. So Prabhupada says it refers to Jivatma. Now it's not wrong because the Jivatma is also Brahma. And Prabhupada immediately qualifies by describing Brahma and Param Brahma are different. So although Prabhupada he translates in his Bhagavad Gita translation as Jivatma. So he does explain about Parabrahma in the purport also. That's the Prabhupada giving us other Acharya's also in commentary. Now, Svabhavo Adhyatma Mukshate. So, what is the... Now this is very interesting. These words, we could have a whole class on them. But you will see that Adhyatma, Adhibhuta and Adhidaita. Where do we commonly hear this? Yes. So only we don't have Adhyajya over there. So Adhyajya is a way to get out of Adhyatma, Adhyabhuta and Adhyadaita. So, Svabhavo Adhyatma Uchyate. So generally in Hindi or Marathi we use Adhyatma, that means spiritual, Adhyatmika. But here Adhyatma has a different meaning. So as I said, what is Svabhavo? Its eternal nature is called Adhyatma, that's it. Svabhavo Adhyatma Uchyate. So, Vishnu Ajit Thakur explained that Svabhava refers to, he says that Aksharam Brahma Paramam refers to the Super Soul, the Supreme Lord, and then Svabhava refers to the Adhyatma refers to the Svabhava, that refers to the soul. It is Svayam Rupena Bhava Yate Iti Svabhava. One who causes soul to look distinct is the living entity. But, generally speaking, whenever there are differences between the Acharyas, either there are differences on Asa, or there are differences on minor issues. The technical definition, and we'll see that Krishna himself doesn't spend so much time on this. The important thing is, the definition is very well. What is karma?
this is one definition. Bhuta Bhava Udbhava Karaha. The Bhut is the living entity. Bhava is the material body. Udbhava is creation. So karma is that activity every day which leads to the creation of the material body as the living entity. So this is itself contrast with akarma. Akarma leads to no further creation of body. So Bhuta Bhava Udbhava Karaha. Nisargaha, that creation is called karma. And then, adibhutam sharo bhavaha purushasyadi daivatam adi ajyo amhe vastra. Svabhavo adhyatma mucchate. Generally, where is the word svabhava came? Remember? Fifth chapter had come. Svabhavat pravartate. What is the cause of action? Svabhava is the cause of action. So, 5.14 it was. So, svabhava here refers to material nature. So, if you think adhyatmic klesh is what? Klesh caused by body and mind. Isn't it? And body and mind is what determines our svabhava. So, svabhavo adhyatma mucchate. The soul has a particular svabhava, and that svabhava is called as adhyatma, and that leads to adhyatmic klesha. And adibhutam sharo bhava. Shara means change. Vikshara is contrasted with aksharam brahma karma. Adibhutam sharo bhava. So the brahma never changes, but the adibhut keeps changing. It's material manifestation. The only thing constant in this world is change. That's the only thing constant in this world. So kshara bhava. So, this material nature is constantly changing. And the Vishwarupa of the Lord. Now, we'll discuss about Vishwarupa. I have a PowerPoint also on Vishwarupa. We'll discuss the Vishwarupa chapter. So, Purushas Chadi Daivatam. So, Abhidaiva is the predominating deity of all the devatas. So, within the material world, it is the Vishwarupa. Beyond the material world, it is Vishnu who exists in the spiritual world. That's why, when that Vishnu from the transcendental world comes to this world, is also called as Purusha. See, Purusha, the word Purusha is normally used only when there is Prakriti. The two are juxtaposed together. So in the spiritual world, there is internal potency. But generally Purusha Prakriti are in connection with the material world. Purusha avatara are those avataras which deal with the Prakriti of this world. So Purusha Chadi Daivatam. That Vishwarup, or we can call this as Mahavishnu, Vaibhodashyasu, Sivashyasu, who pervades the material world. They are the Adidaiva. And Adiyajna. Adiyajna means, now Prabhupada explains the purpose, that Adiyajna can refer to either Indra or Vishnu. Because Indra also accepts sacrifices. But the ultimate object of sacrifice is Vishnu. So Adiyajna, Aham Evatra, Dehe Deha Vitambara. That ultimate object of Adiyajna is situated here in the heart itself, in the Deha itself. And Chakravarti Pala explains, Deha Bhutambara. He is telling Arjuna that you are the best among embodied beings because you are my devotee. So, Bhakto Sinekhachi people. Because you are my devotee, so you are the best among all the beings. And then he focuses especially on the last one. Antakale Chamameva Smaranukva Kalevaram Ya Prayati Samadbhavam Ya Sinatyatra Tamshayaha. Here Krishna is talking about the final stage of death. If anyone remembers, as you know, he will come back to me. And this is a consistent theme in not just Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, in all the very good teachings, not just all the very good teachings. So that was written in a book called Death and Dying in the World's Traditions, in the World Religions. And all the religions talk about the moment of death is very, very important. And they all talk about having some sort of religious, spiritual impressions around you at that time. There is a whole book called the Tibetan Book of the Dead. immediate book of the way. So what is that? That describes what all are the meditations that the dying person should have, what are the meditations that the people around the dying person should have, what are the directions should be given to the dying person so that he can pass the final exam properly. So that was a very popular book. So Prabhupada said, we don't need that. Prabhupada will ask about the Tibetan book of the day. This is the Tibetan book of the day. Prabhupada asked. And how do you want to speak of the Tibetan book of the day? Prabhupada said, the Bhagavad Gita contains everything that you need to know. You don't need to go to the other books. So now, Krishna tells a specific application. Of the universal principle. The first share of the specific application. If you remember me, you will come back. And this is the universal principle. That is, yam yam va pismaran bhavam yajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya satatat bhava bhavitaha. Eva iti. Eva means certainly. Certainly he will attain that. So, this is a logical flow of words. First Krishna is a specific application, then you use a principle, and then he again comes back to the specific application. And applied, not at the moment of death, but throughout one's life. So if you want to remember me at the time of death, what should you do? Remember me throughout your life. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara vidyacha maini arpit suno buddhi mame vaishyatyam sachaya. See, here, both in verse 5 and verse 7, Krishna is using word asamshaya. Why? Because generally, whatever is beyond sense perception is a matter of samshaya for the conditions. Because we seem to believe, no matter what we say. So what is going to happen after death? We don't know. Nobody knows. So Krishna is saying, have faith, don't have doubts. I know, I am the Supreme Lord, I am guaranteeing that He will come back to me. Now, because, you know, Dr. Radhakrishnan would say that he takes that word, you know, what is that? Yada yada yadarma silani bhavati vata abhikrana vata tada manam prajamyaham. So, my Atma I create. So, for him, that verse is revealing the secret of the Gita. And that verse he takes to say that actually the Atma of Krishna and Krishna are different. It's like our body and our Atma are different. So the tadātmānam sujāmi aham, he says. But if you look at the Prabhupāda explained that sujāmi does not mean creation in the sense of that is not existing or brought into existence. Because there are so many other places that just previous was always Krishna saying, ajopisa navyayātmā bhūtānam shoshu prakṛti visvāma nishtāya. My body is ajaya and imperishable. And this previous was also he said that. So the Mayavadis try to differentiate between Krishna and as it is unborn within Krishna. They say Krishna is temporary and Krishna unborn is eternal. So what do you have to actually think about is Brahman? And that's what Ramchandra Puri was telling. Maharaj is saying, why are you lamenting like a Shudra? Think of the Brahman, isn't it? Think of the Brahman, you might be telling that you are spiritual master. So now, in the next verse Krishna will tell, how you should think of me. That is it. He's telling you should always think of me, but how you should think of me? That is the next verse. Tejohyuktena cetasananyagamina paramam purusham divyam yatibhathan chintayan. So, here how do you think of me? By abhyas, by practice. Yoga yuktena, Krishna is not in bhakti yoga, but yoga yuktena. By the practice of yoga, you keep practicing, you do it, and chetasa nanya gamana. Wherever the mind goes, don't let it go, feel it. Always practice thinking of me constantly. And think of me as what? Paramam purusham. And you will attain that paramam purusham, the ati parthana chintan. By that you will attain not the akshara brahma, but the paramam purusham. retain the Supreme Person. So first he tells, actually these two verses, 8 and 9, they are elaboration of the 7th. So always think of the 7th study. So how to think of me? By the process of yoga, by practice, by repeatedly bringing the mind back again and again. And the second part of how to think of me is, what do you think about me? What are my qualities on which you meditate? That is described in the next verse. So because whenever there is thought, there is an object of thought and there is a process of thought. So this verse describes the process of thought and the next verse describes the object of thought. The object of thought is the same. Let's conclude this section and we'll stop with this.
Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anohanyam Samanas Mareya Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Aditya Varanam Samasa Parastar.
All these words are sequential. First of all, know that I am all knowledgeable, I am Kavim. I know everything. So related to Vedaham Samaditam. And I am, so I know I am omniscient and I am eternal. So Puranam, I am the oldest. But although I am old, I am omniscient, so I have complete teaching. So Anushasitaram can mean two things. I am the controller or I am the teacher. Both. Anushasan means discipline. Teach. Discipline involves instruction, discipline involves controls. And then, although I am old, although I am vibrous, as I have come to here, I am very, very anoranya. Smaller than the smallest. You know, Jivatma, super soul, enters even into the atom, smaller than the smallest. But although I am smaller than the smallest, still, sarvasya dhataya. I am the sustainer, the maintainer of everything. Sarvasiddhata means I am carrying everything that is. Dharanta, Sarvasiddhatara. Now, how is it possible for somebody with anoranya and Sarvasiddhatara? That is Achinitya Rupam. My form is Achinitya. And what is the, we give some indicator that I just Achinitya? Aditya Varanam. It is effulgent like the sun. Aditya is sun. Effulgent like the sun. And Tamasaha Parastar, forever beyond the darkness of this world. So, in this way, Krishna talks about his transcendence to material time and space. In the material time and space is eternal, is ancient, is effulgent, and material space is silent. Small and still is sustaining everything that is so big. That's his teaching. This way, by describing his inconceivable attributes, he concludes this section of remembering him. Now, the next verse will elaborate on Abhyasa Yoga Nishtha. How should one do that Abhyasa? How should one practice? First we will describe Yoga Nishtha Bhakti and then we will describe Shuddha Bhakti. Let me continue. Yeah. Good question about inconceivability, and we will postpone this to 9.4, 9.5. That will talk a lot about inconceivability. Okay. So, in the next class, we'll start with the PowerPoint on the chakra system, and then we will talk about Yoga Nishtha. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. Class will be at 3:30.